Welcome, sisters and brothers, to session 332, coming up as an ally, the impact of straight mormons in advancing LGBT issues in the church and in the world. My name is Hugo Olayas. I'm the news editor for Samson Magazine, and I think that we have here an outstanding team of people, panelists, who will be talking about this topic. I asked all of them to be very brief because we have four speakers, and we also have a clip or a 10-minute video clip that somebody's going to show us. I also want to announce that Joshua Ben, who is a, Josh, can you raise your hand? He's the president of Affirmation, Gay and Lesbian Mormons. He's here with us, and in his hand, he has a bunch of booklets. Folks, this booklet that Robert Rees has co-authored is the most remarkable resource we have to help parents, bishops, state presidents of LGBT youth especially, deal with young kids coming out. I'll show you one here. It's called Supporting Families, Healthy Children, Helping Latter-day Saints Families with Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, and Transgender Children. The statements that Bob Rees, our friend and ally, put together for this are all statements from general authorities. You won't find anything here that goes against teachings of the church. It's tremendous. I want to challenge each of you to share it with the bishop, with your state president. In fact, Affirmation is helping underwrite some of the cost. This is very fancy, glossy paper, really wonderfully put together. And Affirmation is helping with some of this cost. So this is what I want you to do. I want you to buy two. Buy one for your bishop, one buy one for your state president. And we are... The price that we're charging is really, really not even covering the cost of printing this. It's $3 each, $5 for two. All right? So here's an envelope to help recoup some of the costs of ordering these guys.
And let's handle the financial. Let's do this at the end of the session. I'll remain behind. So anyone who's interested in purchasing, let's handle it at the end.
Do you have music cards?
No, just
cash. And I would recommend one for your ward library.
There you go. Well, yes, one for the ward library. Yes, why not? After the session and in the afternoon, on the table of affirmation by the lobby, we will also have copies of this. And this that was, I think, what they call a shameless plug. Please turn off your cell phones. This session is by name tag or by admission. We want to help support SANSCO, which is a nonprofit, and all the money that we use for putting together these events reflects in this wonderful setting that we have today. I think I'm going to introduce now our panelists, and I'm going to go just by the order that I have here. This is the first time I'm doing this with my seer song. Okay, I'm going to go from starting at the other end, right? So, Kendall Wilcox spent 17 years at BYU, where he was a producer for BYU TV. And an adjunct instructor in the Department of Theater and Media Arts. Last year, he came out as a gay man and began to create videos in which LGBT Mormons, as well as supportive family and friends, talk about their experiences. His 10-minute video, It Gets Better, at Brigham Young University, which included soundbites by straight allies, has been viewed almost 500,000 times. Kendall is currently working with Mormons, both gay and straight, on a full-length documentary about LGBT Mormon experience called, titled, Far Between. He's also working with Straight Allies in the Mormons Building Bridges Project and in a nonprofit organization, Empathy First Initiative. Then, next to Kendall, we have Erica Manson. She was raised in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and received a BA in Fine Arts from Harvard College. She and her husband, Shipley, raised their 5 kids in almost every capital in the Northeast and in Europe. During that time, Erica spent the precious hours between carpool and soccer games reading and writing. From 2006 to 2008, she worked for Connecticut Grassroots for Obama, while serving as Relief Society president in her ward in Hartford. 3 years ago, the family moved to Utah. She now teaches at the Waterford School, and on approximately May 15, 2012, founded Mormons Building Bridges. Laura Compton's Straight Allies seeds were planted as she grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area, observing the effects of Harvey Milk, and then the outbreak of AIDS and its tragic devastation. Those seeds were nurtured while working at her mother's law offices, where Nadine, who many of us know, provided estate planning services for AIDS patients who would otherwise be unable to care for one another and provide for families after inevitable deaths. As Laura learned that the LDS Church was using the same tactics against gay marriage that they had used against the ERA, and as friends' lives were shortened and families ripped apart under the guise of, quote unquote, protecting the family, her quiet support blossomed and found its voice. She helped create Mormons for Marriage the summer of 2008, when LDS members were asked to do all they could to support Proposition 8. She has continued to track church involvement in same-sex marriage politics and regularly speaks up for rationality, critical thinking, love, and communication from all sides of the marriage equality issue. Laura's other passions include Mormon history, feminism, and social justice. When she's not advocating for those things, she's likely to be found volunteering at her son's school or reading good books or hiking in the Redwoods. John Deland graduated summa cum laude from BYU in 1993 and worked for 15 years in the software industry. He is currently pursuing a PhD in psychology, focusing on the nexus of religion and mental health. His dissertation involves an analysis of the experiences of same-sex attracted Latter-day Saints, specifically relating to attempts to change sexual orientation. John is the founder of Mormon Stories podcast and currently serves as executive director of the Open Stories Foundation, which was established to provide support for Mormons in difficult transitions. The proud father of 4 children, John is married to Margie Weber Delen. I am going to ask, Kendall, do you need to go last because of the...
I think that's a great idea.
Yes? Okay. So would it be okay if we start with Eric in that order? Erica, Laura, and John? Should we do that?
Sure.
I have asked the speakers to take just 10 minutes. We will try to... Because we want time for Q&A on top of everything. So, thank you.
Should we bring that?
You want to speak from there?
Oh, you want me to?
Either.
Oh, okay.
Whatever you feel more comfortable.
Hi, everybody. It's great to be here. Is that working? Okay. On a Sunday morning in June, at the corner of 3rd South and 4th East in Salt Lake, more than 300 Mormons in their church clothes are lining up to march in the Utah Pride Parade. A traveling band of LGBT cheerleaders, some in shorts, some in skirts, some in drag, come up to us. Their routine, "We are proud of you, we are proud of you," is fabulously executed and extraordinarily sincere. Somehow, the guys behind us with the sound truck have heard that we want to say a prayer before marching, and they turn off their techno thump for a few minutes. This is a day of worship for us. We sing "Love One Another," and Jason Miller offers an opening prayer, asking that our message of love will be accepted in the spirit it is given. The sound truck comes back on. Logan Bruick, who's the master of the parade from the Pride Center, gives the word from his megaphone. The Grand Marshal's convertible begins to roll, and we take our first steps. As we turn the corner, the crowd begins to cheer. If this sounds like a modern-day Frank Capra screenplay, it kind of was. I'm still asking myself, how did this happen? Mormons Building Bridges had three goals for the Pride Parade. First, we wanted rank-and-file practicing Mormons to see church members just like them standing up for LGBT people. Second, we wanted the gay community at large to consider the possibility that those people that stream in and out of the conference center twice a year might not be as narrow-minded and judgmental as they sometimes appear. Third, we wanted to give LDS LGBT youth hope. There's a suicide emergency going on with teens in Utah, and the gay LDS factor has a lot to do with that. We wanted to show them that their brothers and sisters in church love them, not in spite of who they are, but because of who they are. Were we successful? On the first point, yes, we were successful, but we don't really deserve that much credit. If we hadn't made the gesture, someone else would have. Thanks to the hard work over the decades of groups like Mormon Stories and Affirmation and Mormons for Marriage Equality, a strong foundation has been laid. Mormon culture seems to have reached some kind of tipping point where a critical mass of Latter-day Saints consider supporting LGBT people a logical expression of their faith. Maybe the misery that many felt while they stood silent during the Prop 8 campaign finally came to the surface, and they wanted to act on that. Maybe a new generation has every intention of continuing to practice what they learned in primary, that Jesus walks away from none, and thereby give those kids give their parents the courage to stand up. As far as reaching out to the LGBT community goes, they taught us what it means to be forgiving and non-judgmental. In the initial stages of planning for the parade, we contacted the gay community leaders in Salt Lake to see if this idea would even fly. Would we be perceived as invaders in this parade? Would we get bottles thrown at us? Well, we were immediately welcomed with open arms. To quote one of our marchers, Dory Ashcroft, who wrote this op-ed in the Salt Lake Tribune, remembering her experience marching, "As a collective group dressed in our church clothes, we looked like the people who had been instrumental in causing damage to our gay brothers and sisters. And there they were, dressed in much cooler clothing, lining the streets of Salt Lake City, throwing out forgiveness, love, and joy with abandon. I don't know that I had ever had a more spiritual Sabbath experience. We were attempting to show Christ-like love, and the crowd upped us." Our last goal, support for and the protection of gay LDS youth, will be much more challenging to achieve. With the teen suicide epidemic going on in Utah, time is of the essence. This is really one of our most urgent issues. And I just want to give another plug for the family acceptance pamphlet. If Ben sells out, go to the website, family acceptance website, buy a couple of them, and buy the pamphlet. Don't just download it, because this pamphlet is so Mormon look, tone, feel. It's just fantastic. My 13-year-old daughter saw it lying on the table and looked through it and said, "This looks like for the Strength of Youth pamphlet." And get it in the hands of your bishop, your stake president, your young men's, your young women's leader. This is really, really important. So while June 3rd was one heck of a great day, it was the day after the march that the real work began. If we went marching down 4th South carrying Love Your Neighbor signs, we better be as good as our word. Mormons Building Bridges wants to provide a place for members to live the gospel by actively loving their LGBT brothers and sisters within a non-political church context. Our Facebook group is a resource to share ideas with one another on how to reach out one-on-one to fellow ward members and start conversations. We're also supporting events that complement our mission, like this weekend's LGBT summit that's being held up in Ogden, like the Pink Dot event that will be here in Salt Lake in October. And we are publicizing and encouraging straight and gay members to attend local LGBT firesides, which really exist and are being run under the authority of the state president in South Jordan. We're working on a project to provide host families for homeless teens. One of the biggest reasons we have homeless teens in Utah is gay kids being pushed out of their families. And if we can provide Mormon homes for them to get them off the street, that would be an amazing thing. In September, Mormons Building Bridges will march in the Las Vegas Pride Parade. And for next year, for the Utah Pride Parade, we have big goals. We want a big float. We want thousands of people. So put it on your calendar now. We want people flying in for this, okay? This is not a local Utah event anymore. Our mission is both very humble, yet if you said it out loud just a few years ago, it's hugely ambitious. We want gay Mormons to feel welcome in our congregations and safe in our pews. Thanks.
Bravo.
Good morning. Thank you, Erica, and especially for the work. You can't love somebody unless you're willing to walk the walk. I thought I'd share with you a little bit about what's been happening to create this Mormon straight ally moment. We talked a little bit about that, and Mormons for Marriage, just for background for those of you who aren't aware, was created back in about 4 years ago when the church First Presidency came out with a letter to say that we needed, that they were going to ask church members to support Proposition 8, which would remove the ability of same-sex people to marry in California, which at that time was legal. When that came about, we decided that those of us who had lived through Prop 22 and had seen what had happened in Hawaii and Alaska and Colorado and Utah and a number of other places where the church had been involved, decided that we needed to have a support system. And the internet was a way to create something that had not been available. It was not a tool that was available as much. It was starting to become available in the year 2000 and in 1999, but it really was not fully, nearly as fully available then as it was in 2008. It has grown even more. This foundation and the ability of people to reach out to each other and to find community, rather than being the single lone person in their own ward who thinks that they're by themselves, they find out that, lo and behold, their neighbor is struggling with the same issue, but is afraid to talk about it in sacrament meeting or Sunday school for fear of reprisal. They find out that the people who are going to church in the sharing buildings with them, their children who are going to different schools, they're sharing this community and creating the community and being able to talk about things that they have not been able to talk about in person. That has been a real blessing of the internet. And in a way, that was a blessing from Prop 8. The harm and the angst and the pain and the suffering that it caused and that continues to divide wards and people in California, had that not happened, people's attention levels would not have arisen to the point where now we have Mormons Building Bridges creating safe homes for LGBT youth who are kicked out. That is a huge, huge step. Just in the last 4 years, we've had some other significant changes in the church. Our church handbook of instructions has removed the request that members should lobby their governments to enact laws preserving traditional marriage. From the time that that statement was read by the First Presidency and that letter was sent out, that instruction has been included in the church handbook every time until the most recent issue in 2010. That's partly a hurdle for creating bridges and for communicating among people, because our leadership have been trained with this idea in mind that part of being a good Mormon is lobbying your government. And so we're trying to remember to point that out to them. Our rhetoric is shifting. In 2008, the primary focus of politics and the church's support for traditional marriage was that we are preserving families and we are changing families and we're protecting families. And what does that say to a family with a gay child, with a gay parent, with a gay spouse? What does it say that we are protecting families but we're going to destroy yours or not let yours come into existence at all? That rhetoric is changing. The church is shifting from saying we're preserving families to saying we're preserving our rights to practice our religion, which makes a lot more sense and doesn't rile me up quite so much as them saying that they want to destroy my neighbors. Good examples of marriages that have lasted longer than a lot of straight people I know. Another thing that has happened in the last 4 years is that the Church Public Affairs Department has actually used the word gay to describe homosexual people, rather than using same gender attraction or, sometimes they have used same sex attraction, I think, but they actually used the word gay this time, and that is, it's a big shift. I don't know if you guys think it's big, but I think it's big. BYU, of course, their It Gets Better project, the understanding same gender attraction group that has formed there at a place where the honor code used to say you couldn't even, practically couldn't even wink at somebody of the same sex. But we're making progress, and people are standing up, and these young students who are coming forward and speaking out, these conversations, this is a huge deal, because every time we can have a conversation, that is one more story that gets shared, and it's one more person who's hearing that, gosh, I'm not alone, and there are people who are like me and people who support me. There is a dialogue article in the Dialogue Journal of Mormon Thought that explored what it might mean to include homosexuals fully and completely within Mormon theology. If you haven't read that article, go read it. We had, as a result, perhaps, of some of the negative press that the church got for its involvement in Proposition 8, when the request for concessions of non-discrimination against homosexuals in housing and in employment came up in Salt Lake City, somebody decided it would probably be a good idea for the church to support that. They came in, they worked with the city, they made a few changes right at the end to make the ordinance work with the church's subsidiaries and wholly owned corporations and stuff, so there's some carve-outs. But at the same time, because the church came out and said it's okay to not discriminate on the basis of orientation for housing and for employment, because they did that and supported that in Salt Lake City, we have lots of cities in Utah and in Idaho who have done the same thing and who have said, gosh, you know, if the church says it's okay, then maybe it really is. There are still a lot of places where discrimination is a huge problem. We have the ability to talk to our state, our city council leaders, our county commissioners, and say, we need to make these changes here too. And if you're worried about it, don't worry, because the church thinks it's okay. We have a fabulous. I'm going to plug this again, because this, I saw the Family Acceptance Project for sure right at the beginning. Like, it was still warm from the press. I got to touch it. And in case you don't know, there's this little gold sticker. And the gold sticker, it has earned a best practices for suicide prevention label. This is the only suicide prevention manual, best practices resource that has ever been created specifically for Mormons. The Trevor Project, the suicide helplines, use this when they need to advise LDS people because it is such a great resource. The other reason to buy this and not just download it, the resources, the proceeds that are coming from the purchase of this are funding a video project that they will be able to use to train state presidents, to train bishops, to train young men and young women's presidents and Relief Society presidencies. That video training is going to be a huge difference and a huge support for helping people.
Two more minutes.
Okay. Two more minutes. The reasons that I'm involved are all reasons that have been stated before. If something that we have done prevents one suicide from happening, we've done something important. If we can make one father understand his lesbian daughter and support her children, his own grandchildren, and welcome them, we've done something important. If one bishop can open the door and welcome an HIV-positive man into his ward in full fellowship and acceptance, we've made a difference. If we can reduce our labels of us and them and reach out across the divide, we'll figure out that we are all going the same direction. Some of us are going really fast and really like it really fast, and some of us are just taking our first tentative steps. And the important thing is that we can all reach out. I go for walks with my kids, and my oldest has just figured out how to ride a bicycle. He wants to ride a bicycle everywhere. He goes fast. And his younger brother cannot go that fast. I'm constantly saying, wait for us, catch up, wait for us. I'm being pulled both ways. But that's kind of how we are in our conversations right now. There are people who have been doing it for a long time, who are very passionate, who are seeing change and who want more change, and we aren't quite going fast enough. And we have people who are just in church wondering, is it okay for me to say, I have a gay sister-in-law? Or I have a child who's coming out. We have organizations in our communities right now who are discriminating against gays and lesbians. We have children who are in the scouting program who are being told they can no longer be scouts if they are going to be openly gay. What are we going to do about that? How are we going to change this conversation and make children who are capable and seem completely worthy of being good Mormons in full standing and their parents and their brothers and their fathers and being excluded from the most important activity program that our church has? Are we going to tell our church that, yes, it's okay if we're involved in this program that's keeping our youth in a closet, that's not letting them participate? Are we going to say, we need to change something here? These are things that we can do. Mormons Building Bridges has made huge strides. There are books in libraries that are being taken out. We need to get them back. How can we talk with our children about the importance and the normalcy of homosexuality and the importance of family if we continue to burn and censor books for them to read? How can we allow children to end up on the streets? We need to walk the walk. We can't just say, I love you, I'll walk with you, I appreciate everything you're doing. We need to be there and support them. And we're here now. Let's all make a difference and come together. Thanks.
The first time I kind of started thinking about, no, the first time I approached the LDS, LGBT, same-sex attraction issue with Mormon Stories was when I interviewed a man named Buckley Jepson. I don't know if any of you know who Buckley Jepson is, but this is this sweet, beautiful man who lived in the Washington, D.C. area, had served in several bishoprics until the point where he fell in love after having a mixed orientation marriage for probably two decades, children. Just couldn't do it anymore, served in the church in bishoprics, beautiful man, found the love of his life and decided to get married in Canada. And there were no problems up until that point. There was kind of a don't ask, don't tell policy with his bishop, and everything was cool. But the minute his bishop changed, as I understand it, and he got married legally, his bishop and the state president came after him. This is how I remember the story. And I remember being contacted for the first time that he was about to be excommunicated. And I had never interviewed someone on Mormon Stories before about these issues. Now, intellectually, I was on board because of family and other members that I had grown to love and understand about this issue. But I don't think it had fully sort of absorbed into me this issue and the importance of it that we were dealing with. So I interviewed Buckley Jepson. We spent 3 or 4 hours. It was probably the longest interview I'd done to date. And I was just struck by how beautiful this man was. He said that the bishop wouldn't give him a calling. And so what he would do is whenever someone got baptized, he would purchase for the new converts a set of scriptures and a hymnal as a gift to them, because that was a contribution that they would let him make, that he could make in the church. Just a beautiful man. And so we released the podcast, and Jennifer Dobner, I think, or Peggy Fletcher, one of the two, did an article on him, you know, to try and see if there was any way that we could preempt his excommunication. And lo and behold, to everyone's surprise, his bishop was called on a mission, sort of mysteriously, and he was never brought before a church court. And this is the first time that I really thought, wow, like, we can make a difference here. Like, if we speak up and shine a little bit of a spotlight on what's going on, we might be able to actually help move the needle a little bit. And so I interviewed a few more people. I interviewed the grandson of an apostle who's passed away, and he talked about the extent to which he was struggling with same-sex attraction. I did these in video, and I put them up on a website called LDSHomosexuality.com. I interviewed a woman, this sweet returned missionary who married two men trying to do the straight LDS married thing, got divorced from both of them. And then I interviewed Bruce Rogman, the father of this young man, who both he and his parents knew that this young man was different, but he never had the conversation with his son. And while his son was putting in his papers for his mission, he and his wife were out on a date or something, and the son fills out his application for his mission. He sets it on his bed, and then he goes into his garage and he hangs himself. And Bruce and his wife come home and find his son there. Or even worse, I think it was actually his brother who found him hanging from the rafters. And I remember in that interview with Bruce where he said, there was a point I was serving like in a state high council, and I had this feeling, maybe my son's gay. Even though the son had never dated a woman in all his high school experiences, was very interested in art and theater, you know, I had this feeling that I should talk to my son and just ask him, are you okay? Are you struggling? And he said, but I pushed it back down because I didn't want to know the answer. And he looked at me in that interview and he said, I wish I'd had that conversation with my son. And I thought, wow, these stories have to be told. And the stories are always the same. These people didn't choose it. They did everything they could to change it. That very attempt of trying to change it made them want to end their life. And that these were the most amazing, beautiful people. And we can't just stand by and let this incredible suffering keep happening. And when you feel it, when it really grabs you, it sticks with you in a way that you can't just sort of sit by and let these people become the casualties of a church that means well. You realize that this really is the civil rights issue of our age. You know, I remember as a boy in Texas reading those textbooks about, you know, those people that got to march in Selma for the blacks in the 60s, and I thought, I wish I could have marched in Selma. You know, that's how I felt at the time. I wish I could have been there and been in jail with Martin Luther King and been a part of it. Well, this is our chance. You realize that is exactly what we're facing here. That is the opportunity to alleviate suffering and to stand up and to be a part of things. And then Proposition 8 happened. I remember I was mowing my lawn when I found out that the church was going to start lecturing the world about traditional marriage. And I thought, really? Our church is going to lecture the world about traditional marriage. I almost exploded. Laura and I got together and we started Mormons for Marriage, and Laura took that over, and I felt really good about what we were doing and the visibility that that was bringing. Laura was on NPR, and the newspapers were going after her. And I thought, Mormons, wow, we really can have a visible presence and show that not all Mormons are alike and just speak up. And so I turned to the podcast and I interviewed Bill Bradshaw and Carolyn Pearson and Bruce Bastian and Michael Quinn and then Kendall and others. And it got to the point where my listeners were getting frustrated with me. And they said, John, you may as well just rename Mormon Stories Gay Mormon Stories. Because I'm getting really tired of all the gay stuff on Mormon Stories. And I was concerned because I didn't want to lose my audience, but there were a lot of people. And this was a, you know, this was really driven home to me when my buddy from Texas named Jason approached me. Now, Jason, we grew up in the same town, same age. He was struggling with issues around church history and doctrine and theology. And his father had been a bishop, and his family was very prominent, very large family. He felt alone. He felt like he had these secrets inside of him that he couldn't share with family or friends. He felt like he was the only one, and he felt guilty and shamed that he was having these doubts about the church, but he didn't know what to do with them. Does that sound familiar? And so Jason comes to me simultaneously as I'm helping him work through his faith crisis, him feeling like he can't talk to anybody, and he says to me, John, listen, buddy, you know, my sister came out as a lesbian when I was in high school or when I was on my mission, and she's kind of weird, but, you know, so I want you to know that I, you know, I understand that this is an important issue, but can you just lay off the gay thing, dude? It's just, it's too much, you know? And I, you know, this is a liberal, this is a progressive person who loves Mormon Stories, and he's telling me, lay off the gay thing, it's just not my issue, right? And so I'm like, oh, I got really discouraged. I'm like, if I can't win over Jason, like, how are you going to win over all these other people, right? Well, that wasn't the end of the story. About a year later, Jason had two other sisters. Okay, one of them had been married to a man. The marriage failed, and now she was on her second marriage. And no one in the family quite understood why this sister just wasn't able to make it work with her husband. And then one day, she came out to her brother Jason and said, "I'm a lesbian." And then, within a few months, the third sister, who had served a mission, who was the most righteous in the family, who was about 30 years old, and nobody quite understood why she hadn't found that guy yet. She was attractive, she was athletic, she was fit. And all of a sudden, she comes out to Jason, too. And all of a sudden, that issue that Jason thought wasn't his issue became his issue. But the most beautiful thing happened because he said, "Mom, Dad, watch Mormon Stories. You can go watch Carolyn Pearson. Watch Michael Quinn. Watch these people. You'll understand these." Because the parents were Orthodox Mormons, shell-shocked by the fact that they now had three lesbians in one family. Right? And so they watched Mormon Stories, and they saw the other stories, and these people converted to activists for the cause within a matter of weeks. And all of a sudden, they were sending me letters of support. And the most beautiful thing of all that happened is that this one sister that everyone had marginalized, that everyone had thought, you know, was just a little bit weird and different, she gets brought back into the family into full fellowship. And all of a sudden, Jason is able to talk to his parents about his own doubts and concerns about the gospel. And guess what he finds out? That his own mother hadn't believed in the church for 20 years, but felt like she couldn't tell anybody. And all of a sudden, this family that was a nice, solid family has new levels of depth and love and communication and sincerity that surpassed anything that they would have imagined before. And it was because love cracked through all the obstacles and the superficialities of the family. And all of a sudden, their conversations became really, really real.
2 more minutes.
Okay. And so we've continued. We had this vision of having a gay general conference where we could have LGBT people up there bearing their testimonies and talking about the gospel and singing. And so we started the Circling Wagons thing. I have to say that that would have never happened without the work of Ann Peffer, someone that I've worked very closely with, and other people like Joseph Broom and others, and Kendall. And we've held now 2 or 3 Circling the Wagons events all over the country. We've got one coming up in California soon. And just crazy enough, Bill Bradshaw approached me about wanting to get some data on sexual orientation change efforts. And this little project that Bill and I started that we thought might be able to make a small difference has now turned into my dissertation for my PhD. And the data from this survey of 1,600 LGBT Mormons will blow your mind. And all I just want to say is that love pulls you in. if your heart is open to it. And people who don't think that this is their issue, it will become their issue because it will touch every one of them. And every one of you who stands up and says, I'm gay, every story that Kendall captures on his in his video project, every person that speaks up and says, I'm gay, I'm out, here I am, is going to be changing the hearts and minds. You guys are the real heroes here, but we're happy to participate. And the only other thing I'll just add is that being an ally gives to you in a way that it enriches your life in a way that you would have never felt possible. You get to all of a sudden feel like your life means something. You get to feel like you're making a difference instead of just sort of going to the office, doing that job, and coming home, rinse and repeat. You get to all of a sudden feel like you've got a purpose, you've got a mission. You get to meet and work with the most beautiful people you could ever imagine. Not just the LGBT individuals, but the allies as well, are just glorious people. You get to engage in the alleviation of suffering, which is what Christ and the gospel are all about. And most importantly, we get to bring these beautiful people who have been excised, who have been cast out of our communities, you get to bring them back into our lives. And this is the most important lesson of all, is that we have suffered by having these people be exiled. We have lost out on their spiritual and their psychological and their intellectual and their creative gifts. And the extent to which we can bring them back into full fellowship in our communities is the extent to which all of our lives are enriched and enlightened. It's the most beautiful thing. So that's my testimony.
To this scene, so I'm going to keep it short and we'll watch the video. Just a little bit about my story. Again, worked for BYU for really about 20 years and worked in church audiovisual and taught at BYU and all the while coming into awareness of my sexuality. And as it became more acute and more obvious, being in communications, I was hyper aware, hyper vigilant of the tone, the tenor, the approach, the outcome of the communications happening mostly within the LDS culture around the issue of homosexuality. And as I continue to come out to my own process and observe how the communications and these conversations were taking place in homes, in our larger Mormon culture and congregations, I was just increasingly discouraged. In fact, some of my lowest points, even lower than feeling sort of suicidal because I felt no sense of being stuck in between the church and my sexuality, even lower were times when I was observing just the horrific outcomes of these conversations, again, happening on all these different levels within our culture. And it was just very discouraging to me that, you know, okay, so maybe we don't have all the answers, but we can't even engage one another and talk in a way that's constructive and productive and helps all of us sort of find better and better answers to the most salient questions that are sort of vexing us all. And so coming out of that context and then finally deciding to come out myself and do something about it, that's where I came at and approached the current project that I'm working on, the Far Between project, picking up on a lot of the work that John DeLynn did before. I secretly, with my laptop, would watch some of those interviews that he described, Michael Quinn, for example, and was moved just to know that I'm not alone, of course. But then picking up on that idea and trying to really boil down the nature of our conversations, the dynamic, what's at play in our conversations, again, in our Mormon culture, and trying to find a way to engage potential straight allies within our Mormon society in a way that speaks their language, in a tone that is inviting, in a way that draws them into the conversation rather than confronting them or in any way driving them out of the conversation. And so the conceit of what we do now with Far Between and with the work we do with Empathy First Initiative is hopefully very, very, very simple. The idea is to engage somebody new into the conversation by on the level of story, to engage them with very simple first-person, deeply heartfelt first-person stories of what it's like for these individuals or what it means to them to be homosexual and Mormon. And give access to these stories to as wide as possible audience. And then the next step after introducing people to these stories, if their hearts are stirred in any way and they increase in their empathy for these individuals, because so many people that I've heard from literally just come forward and say, thank you for this, I just didn't know. I thought I had some pretty settled assumptions, but I didn't realize that they were just assumptions that I had settled on about what it is like, what the nature of homosexuality is, or what it's like to be homosexual and Mormon. And they've been able to just watch story after story after story. And then the next stage of what we're trying to help people do is then engage them in the processing of these new ideas and understandings that they have about what it means to be homosexual and Mormon, and help them sort of walk through that process of reconciliation. And again, this is all focused towards the potential straight allies and sort of that movable middle population of our Mormon community that really do, you know, practice what they preach in terms of wanting to love others, empathize, show compassion, but just haven't been given the tools to engage with those principles, those virtues, in the context of homosexuality because of their cultural context. So we're trying to help people, again, just engage in simple, empathy-based conversations to process how they feel about homosexuality. And that's it. That's all we're trying to do. And if we can accomplish that, that's huge. Huge. So I think that's my cue, I guess. So the video that we're going to watch is part of our overall project, the overall Far Between project. We did it in concert with Julia Hunter, who was working with Mormon Stories, and features all straight allies within the church telling how they're trying to make it better for their gay brothers and sisters.
Do we need mic for the sound?
Did it hibernate? Did it sleep for a while?
Yeah.
I can. Do you need help, or do you know how to do it?
I think I need to log back in. Yeah. So we'll just start again.
Is that a Mac or a PC?
It's a PC.
Is it on Far Between?
Yeah, and on YouTube.
No, I think it's on file.
What?
Just have to log into the UAV system.
I got it. What's, do you mind switching?
Sure.
A mini. Okay, all right.
Can you guys hear?
Hi, you don't know me, but I think I know you. I have a son with same-sex attraction.
My oldest son is gay. He was such a perfect child, and he was just—he was a perfect son. I have a gay daughter. She came out when she was 22, and I have a couple of close friends who are gay in the church. I have so much love in my heart through the many associations that I have with the gay community.
I don't know what it's like to be gay. I'm straight.
I have my own son
who's
gay.
He came out when he was a senior in high school.
And when he came out, I wasn't quite ready to accept that situation.
And it was tough, I'm not going to lie. I was afraid it would reflect on my poor parenting.
But I really love my daughter and I really care about her, and I need pretty much nothing.
I realized that there's people out there that are at different levels that are trying to put their arms around and their heads around this situation. I grew up believing Mormon, and so I never really thought about the Mormon standpoint on homosexuality.
Currently, I'm serving as the bishop of my ward, and I didn't really understand these issues very much.
I grew up where people told me that being gay was wrong and it was a sin. But I'm going to tell you that I changed. And I now know that even though maybe your friends or your family or your parents or the people at your church or the people in your neighborhood don't understand who you are, they can change.
There was once upon a time that I told a coworker of mine that if a gay ever came on to me, I'd punch him. Now you know what I would do? I'd probably hug him.
I prayed really hard to him, and I just said, Heavenly Father, help me understand this.
And I realized that it was not a choice. He did not choose this.
And we recognize that this is something that just happens.
Nobody in their right mind would choose this. Nobody that is LDS would choose to be ostracized by their whole entire family. Nobody would. Who would?
To feel like nobody will love and accept you, and that your life will be wrecked or ruined or destroyed. And I know it's a terribly lonely, sad and a discouraging and isolating place to be.
In 2005, a month before his 20th birthday, he tried to take his life. And we found out at that time that he was gay.
I remember coming down and seeing my son attempt suicide. That was hard for a parent. And at that time, I thought, why would he want to do that?
Even though I don't know what it's like to be gay, I feel like I do know what it's like to be alone.
I know how hard that is, and I don't want you to ever, ever feel like you are alone.
There are a community of people who are Mormon, who understand and want to help.
There are people out there, and there are allies within the Mormon Church.
I am trying so hard to make this world a better place for you, not only within Mormonism, but within the world.
I'm learning how to be the best ally, the best advocate that I can be for you.
All God told me over and over and over again was you love your son unconditionally.
My job is to love. My job is to accept.
I want you to know that you are loved. That you can find peace and hope. What matters is that God loves you. That Christ loves you for who you are.
This is what it's all about. Jesus Christ is about healing. About love, about inclusion.
And I think that Jesus would absolutely embrace all of you. I love you, even though I don't know you, because I know how great you are. I think it's important that you don't check out. You be around so that you can make the difference.
So hold on. We care about you. We love you.
If you're different,
teach us. You help us. You help us love. You help us understand more about ourselves, about compassion. And when that happens, we change the world.
Having gay children has been one of the best things that has happened to me. I am a better person. Gay people have taught me how to truly love. I really have a testimony that Heavenly Father wants us to all love each other. He wants us to embrace each other right where we are. Please know that it will get better and hold on.
I'm here to tell you that things do get better.
Things change as you move forward.
Society is moving in your direction.
I believe that it will get better through our love that we have, that God has endowed us with.
I just pray whoever's watching this that you will learn to love yourself and appreciate who you are as a person and see your divinity, your higher self, your spirit, who you really are. And I say this in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
I know that you are trying to raise funds to finish your movie. I have an envelope here. This is for me to eat. And I put a bill inside. And I want to invite anyone who has moved to this to consider doing this. Kendall is trying to raise funds to finish his movie. I think this is proof that this is self-funding. Time for Q&A. Please come forward with your questions.
Not a question, but standing ovation of gratitude for what you were doing. How exquisitely joyful it is to be here and experience this, and how I honor your courage for keeping your voice strong. We need you. Thank you.
I'll take a stab first, just because I happened to see something like this on a Facebook group that I was in, and I'm sure that, I can't remember which one it was, I'm sure it was one of these people was on as well, so you guys can help with this. A woman came to the group and said, I think my son is gay, what should I do? But he hasn't come out, and she's trying to figure out, she kind of gets this idea that perhaps he might even, either he doesn't want to tell her, or maybe he doesn't know. And a lot of the answers that came from people who are gay said that coming out is something that is a very personal thing, and sometimes you might even not realize yourself. I have a friend who is gay and who killed himself, and when he was coming out to his parents, he never used the word homosexual or gay to describe himself, because his idea of what gay was or what homosexual was kind of like a drag queen or somebody in tight leather chaps marching down half naked through San Francisco streets. He didn't realize that there were gay people who wore ties and shirts and went to church with him. And so he never put that label on himself. I think what a lot of people said was that be open to those conversations, and maybe if not just asking them straight up, are you gay? But maybe saying, you know, I saw this, I read this book about gay families, I saw this news article, I had this conversation, what do you think about it? And be open to having that conversation and let them know how you feel. And if something happens, somebody walks down the street and says, oh, that's so gay, how many times has anybody ever heard that or heard it in a positive notion, in a positive sense? And just speak up and say, you know, we don't use that kind of language, and it's something to be, so let them know that there is a safe place, that you're a safe person to talk to, and I'm taking up all this time and I don't need to.
No, that's good.
John, are you going to say something?
Yeah, just for a second.
Sure.
So, one of the things that I hear most about podcasts is this sense that people feel so alone and isolated. They don't have information. They think they're the only one suffering. And what's transformative about stories is that someone can not have to come out to anybody, not have to risk anything. They can sit in the privacy of their own bedroom, and they can watch and listen to people tell their stories. And that, in and of itself, can be very healing, separate from whatever resources that also might be available. So I'm just going to show you a couple resources. The first one is up on YouTube.com. It's Kendall's YouTube page. Far Between Movie is the thing to search for in YouTube. But what Kendall's assembled are stories of various gay and lesbian individuals that he's interviewed for his movie. Some of these segments are 10, 15, 20 minutes long. People of all different ages, allies, parents, etc. And, you know, once a kid who's struggling can just go up here and start watching these stories, the kid's going to feel validated, the kid's going to get ideas, the kid's going to feel like he's not so bad, and that's going to be helpful. I joked about Gay Mormon Stories, but we're set to launch a podcast called Gay Mormon Stories, and we're actually going to, you can't see the logo there, but we're actually going to spend a couple hundred hours interviewing gays and lesbians for the podcast to help provide similar resources. We've also, Facebook has become a really valuable asset as well. So if, you know, what we did at Mormon Stories is we created an LGBT support group. There's over 400 people who are in this support group, and people can just go up here in a private forum, ask each other questions, make friends, help each other out. But that's not the only support group out there. Understanding Same Gender Attraction is another Facebook group that has over 1,000 members in it, started by these kids at BYU who have a BYU-sponsored support group there on campus. Again, this is a place where 1,000 people are getting to know each other and sharing their stories and information with each other. If people are interested in data, the LDSHomosexuality.com website's been turned into where we release the results of our study so that parents and others can actually read the data and find out, you know, for example, we have a lot of responses to the Josh Weed. We have a lot of data that provides information about Josh Weed and the risks and the probabilities of entering into a mixed orientation marriage so that people can just sort of not just tell their gay child, Josh can do it, but instead they can go up to this website and see the divorce rates of people in mixed orientation marriages based on our sample, the quality of life issues that are involved. So resources can be very helpful.
If you want to, we'll put a bunch of those up on our website, mormonsformarriage.com. And so in case you missed them and you can't catch up with John or with Kendall, we'll stick them all in one place, Mormons for Marriage.
Oh, sorry, I forgot.
Another place where you will find links to all the resources that John and Laura mentioned is affirmation.org, there's two sections there that particularly refer. One is allies, so it's affirmation.org/allies, and the other one is affirmation.org/youth if you're particularly interested in resources that relate to young people.
Just go to YouTube and type in "It Gets Better Mormon." It's an "It Gets Better" video. Type in "It Gets Better Mormon," and there's two. There's the BYU students, and then there's the one you just saw.
Yeah, I've seen the BYU students.
Yeah, it's right there. It'll come up as like the second or third video.
Okay. And also, Laura, do you have the reference on the dialogue article that you talked about?
I have a link to it at Mormons for Marriage. I don't remember.
Go on dialogue.org.
Yeah.
It's free for downloading.
Taylor Petrie at dialogue.org, and it's something like towards a new understanding of post-heterosexual
You know what I'm trying to say.
I just want to say too, on the videos, we also posted all the full-length videos that we cut, little bits and pieces down to that one main video, but we did the full-length videos of each of the individuals under the same heading, Mormon It Gets Better, or Mormon Friends and Family It Gets Better. So.
Yes. First of all, thank you all so much for what you do. It's very inspiring, and I'm personally very grateful. I just had a question. I understand how homosexuality can be incorporated into the gospel of love, but how can any of you imagine it could be incorporated into Mormon theology? Could gay people be incorporated into the gospel?
That's what the dialogue.
Read Taylor Petrie's article.
Yeah,
it's too hard to sum it up. I cannot do it in this limited amount of time. But you know, we're all God's children. And we're all created by God, and there's room.
I'm very excited about this. I've been on the board of youth theater for a lot of years and watched a lot of young people grow up and find no place to go. I believe that eventually a doctrine will have to make room. But that's not something that can come as much from grassroots as from enlightenment, from people who are above us in hierarchy. And so something that we as allies can do is to fast. We have a small group of people who fast every Monday, two meals, so that the hearts of our leaders will be softened, so that they will come in contact with materials that invite love into their hearts, so that it becomes their issue as well. And any of you who would like to join us, we fast Mondays. Thank you.
Bishop Robert Rees, we gave a shameless plug to your booklet. Would you like to say something about this booklet?
Sure.
Sorry for interrupting your soda drink.
Sessions, and I just want to make it 100% into this one too. I think the wonderful thing about the pamphlet that Caitlin Ryan and I have produced is that I said in an earlier session this morning that one of the things when I editor of Dialogue, I published Lester Bush's landmark article on blacks and the priesthood, and had several scholars respond to it, and one of them is Hugh Nibley. And Hugh Nibley, in his response, said, "What's surprising is not how little we know about this, about that particular issue, but how little we've wanted to know, how little we've cared to know." And I think the surprising thing about Dr. Ryan's research at San Francisco State, she's a Catholic who came to Utah a number of years ago to do research on homeless youth. Found a number of the homeless youth were Latter-day Saints. She'd been looking at church culture and found that there are probably no other religious group for whom families are more important than they are to the Latter-day Saints. And she noticed that when young people leave Latter-day Saint families or other families, they go and find another family. And often that other family is not as safe or as nurturing for them as the one they've left, or the one they left potentially as safe and nurturing. And so she said, you know, if we could find a way to teach families how to love their gay children without them having to make any compromise in terms of doctrine or anything else, just show them. So her research, which I'm really proud to be a part of what she's doing, was to say to families, if you are rejected, if you say to your child who comes out to you, as I know from being a bishop, that some people said, no, you have to choose between our family and doing that, and who felt that there this terrible kind of Sophie's choice between who I am in the church or who I am in my family, that no person should ever have to make. And she said, you know, if a parent could simply say something like this, I don't understand this, I don't like it, I wish you weren't, but you are my son, you're my daughter, and nothing changes that. And I will always love you, and I will be an advocate for you. If a parent can say that, or something like it, to a child, it means that that child's chance of being depressed, being drug addicted, infected with HIV, is reduced by, you know, maybe from 30, the chances are increased 3 to 4 times if you are rejected. And if you are an accepting parent, and again, keep in mind that this doesn't mean to say, we'll be on Journey to the Rainbow Coalition. It simply means, you are my child, and I love you, and I always love you, no matter what. And if someone says something to you at church, which is a put-down, I want to know about it because I want to go to the bishop of the St. Christ and tell him that that shouldn't be allowed in our church. Or if somebody at your school says things that are hurtful or hateful, I want you to know that because I want to be your advocate. A child from a rejecting family has an 8 times greater chance of attempting or committing suicide than a child from a highly accepting family. That it has taken a Catholic to study Mormon families and to invest a significant amount of money in doing research and producing a little booklet here that teaches families how to be accepted. I wish we had done it, but I'm grateful somebody did. And get this book pamphlet and give it to your bishop and your state president, whoever else needs to understand. Thank you.
Next question.
My name is Ash, and I know some of you, and I want to thank you first for the work that you're doing. I think it is so important, and I really admire all of you. But I also had a suggestion. As somebody who identifies as queer, I wanted to say that I understand why in the video we just saw, and in some of our work, we take the perspective of talking about, you know, being born this way, or not having a choice, or it being very, very difficult and painful, because that's the reality of a lot of people. But somebody in the video said, I can't imagine anybody choosing this, and I'm somebody who chose it. And I want to say that I think it would be very helpful, in addition to some of the sad things that are put in there, and the real reflective, you know, stories about people who did want to die, etc., to put in things of people who were like, I think I'm rad. I think that I'm really awesome. I'm having the greatest time being queer. It's great. And I have a lot to teach about sexuality and about relationships and about being a person with a core identity. So I just encourage more of that in the videos that you do. And also talking about being an ally. And I know people need to be honest about their process of coming to love people that they were scared to love the first night. I'm really impressed with honesty in the videos like that, because it's not very flattering to say, I had a hard time at first, etc. But I also think as allies, it's really important to remember that even when you're being an ally, your love isn't saving somebody else. You're learning from them as an awesome person. And so it's not just that gay or queer people teach people how to love, although they do, but also that they have other things to teach. Like, they have things, like I said before, to teach about how to have relationships and different kinds of relationships and different kinds of sex and different kinds of sexuality, and that they're people to be learned from and not to just be rescued. And I just say that because I know that in my efforts to be allies in other areas, I can fall prey to that. It's a really fine line. So I wanted to thank you for the work you're doing and just say that as a suggestion.
Thank you.
Ash, thank you so much for that. And that's a point that's always hard, you know. A lot of times you kind of feel like, how can I do this? I went to a lecture about reaching out to third world countries and to impoverished areas within our own country, and it seems it's very, I'm totally spacing on this word, condescending for us to come in and say, here's how it should be, and isn't it great, and this is what you need. We need as allies to listen, and we need to hear, what do you want, what do you want to give, what do you need from us? We can be a go-between between the straight people who are not allies, and sometimes, like when we talk about this with feminism, that sometimes having a man say something, even though it's the same thing that a woman says, just by the fact that it was a man's voice who said it, people listen better. And sometimes when it's a straight person who says it, they listen better than a queer person or a lesbian person or a gay person or any of those, all those letters. And we need to, as allies, be very, very careful that we're not coming in and swooping in and saying, here, let me save you from your problems. And we need to be very sensitive with that. Thank you for that reminder.
Next question.
It's not a question, but thanks, Ash. I was a little nervous about coming up for a my name's Kate. I'm a lesbian, and I'm rad. There we go. And I wanted to thank John for your resources, because it helped me in my coming out process. And honestly, my father's the one that found it, and it's helped him a ton. Every once in a while, he goes, so, men? No, not at all. I'm like, yeah, no. And it's really helped him on his journey as my father. But I'd like to challenge all of you straight people out here. And I want to talk to you about what it means to you about acceptance. Because I, as a lesbian, am still running into walls with people, because you can be all for gay rights, and I'm like, awesome, I can talk to this person. And then I'm like, oh, I'm dating this girl, and she's so cool, and she's so smart, and she's so pretty. And they get uncomfortable. And I shut that conversation down. And I'm not accepted anymore. And I'm feeling rejected. So I stay with people that I understand get me. And that's my family. So I honestly don't know if I'll ever come back to the church, because I still get uncomfortable looks. And dating is so, so emphasized. And I'm excited to be dating, but no one wants to hear about it. No one. And I'm just, it's frustrating. Because even some of my most accepting friends, they'll tolerate it. And I know that's what it is. And I'll be like, you know what? I had an awesome date, and you're just going to deal with me talking about it. So just deal with this for a minute. And then, fine, tell me about your day and how you made up with this boy, whatever. It's fine. I can totally do the girl talk thing, but I want it in return. So I want to challenge everyone to push yourselves. I know everyone is in a different point in their journey, but really, I still keep running into walls, and I would like to see those in yourselves, even if you feel you're super accepting, but still keep working on it, because I know you don't get it. And that's okay. but still, if you can be happy for me and truly look like you're not uncomfortable, then you just made a new friend. And I'm happy to share all my awesome things about myself that I'm willing to give and my love. Thank you.
Thank you. Oh, sorry. Thank you so much for that. And I just wanted to let you know that teaching people how to be comfortable in those conversations is one of the things Mormons Building Bridges is about. And if you would ever feel comfortable joining our Facebook group and telling that story, you would have people listening who really, really want to hear what you have to say and really want to hear practical ways to be good friends to their gay and lesbian, to be truly good friends, and as you're talking about, not just supportive of their causes, but there for them and interested in their lives. So thank you so much.
Next question. We have about 7 minutes.
My name is Eva. I'm an ally, and I also just wanted to say I'm always up for girl talk. but my question is actually because my husband and I are both from very conservative families, and we have no immediate family members that are gay, and we have no extended family members that are gay. And so we kind of came to this cause through just our own hearts and experience, and it's something we care about a lot. And my husband had the audacity at our recent family boating trip. While we were there, the scouts came out with their statement, and he brought it up with his family as a topic of discussion. And it lasted through the night, and it was just kind of his dialogue with them of trying to get them to understand, and like, he's much better than I am. At one point I just felt like crying so hard I just had to kind of check out from the conversation. So my question, I guess, is actually because how do we as allies in this dialogue, is there a way in this dialogue with people, because John gave his example of his friend that came to this issue, but he came to it because he kind of had to. Like, it's his immediate close family. But how do we as allies come to this dialogue in a way with LDS members that it isn't directly, like, in their face, in their lives? Is there a way to do that in a way that engages them without them just doing what his family did, which was to kind of just check us out and think that they needed to start telling us how we needed to strengthen our testimony.
Well, this is a shameless plug for FarBetweenMovie.com. That is the one of the main purposes of putting up all the interviews that we've done. Is so that people can, sort of like John described, in the privacy of their own home when nobody's watching, sit down and watch these stories. And we've tried to conduct the stories in a way that are non-confrontational, inviting the people to share their stories in a way that, again, draws people into listening to their stories and doesn't sort of shame or blame them for why don't you get it already, but just say, this is my story. And when you start to hear one after the other, after the other, after the other, and there's all these similarities, you begin to be able to process, okay, this is what we're really talking about, at least. And have some accurate understanding of their life situation. And then from there, you know, there are other tools to be able to help engage them in the conversation.
John?
There are a lot of analogies here with those who are in faith crisis who try and talk to believing members about things they're struggling with. There are walls and there are obstacles that we're not going to be able to penetrate no matter how hard we try. And honestly, my experience is with a lot of people, the more you attempt to change or preach to them, you create resistance and they actually move in the opposite direction. So the only thing that came to my mind is, you know, you should always be tactful. Without charity, you have nothing. So just make sure you always come from a place of love and charity. But maybe there are other things you can do than see your role as being to persuade family and friends. Once you've sort of spoken out and they know where you stand, maybe that's all you can do for now with them. But maybe you can call this young lady who wants to talk about her date and become her friend. And maybe that's a different way of being an ally. Or maybe you can join one of these support groups or one of these teams or help Kendall with what he's doing or go march in a parade. All those things are helping to change hearts and minds too. But the direct, I'm going to try and convince you approach, usually, in my experience, creates resistance. And so once they know where you stand, you've done your work there, and maybe you can find other ways to contribute too. That's what occurs to me.
Can I actually follow up too? In the work that we're trying to do, again, and with Far Between, trying to engage exactly the kind of people that you're talking about, the main tip that we give is to try to engage people from a place of empathy, to try to build empathy, not just for what it's like to be gay and Mormon, but actually express a desire to empathize with them and reach out to them and say, okay, well, help us better understand your position, where it's coming from, what's your history behind it, what's your personal experience, what are your feelings, where are these feelings coming from? Not in an accusatory way, but genuinely so that you can be better equipped to dialogue with them, you know, because you understand them better. But what that also does, and this sounds a little like subterfuge, but it actually helps increase their self-awareness because you're asking questions that maybe they've never actually asked themselves. They're just sort of speaking out of instinct or out of habit or out of the cultural, you know, habituation. And you're stopping them and saying, okay, I respect where you're coming from. Can we dig deeper and find out why, what it's about for you, and so on? In that process of self-awareness, actually, it helps a lot of people clarify for themselves what it is about, what it isn't about. And that way you can actually have a far more constructive conversation. You're not debating. There's no polarizing. You're just saying, well, let's try to build on understanding each other. So,
Nadine, you literally gave birth to Mormons for Marriage.
Broader society and changing in the church. But I did want to also say, in addition to giving birth to Laura, I also gave birth to the website Mormons for Aid, which tracked the Mormon money in the Prop 8 campaign. And I wanted to point out that we still have the political aspects of this that we need to deal with. And that website is no longer up because it's kind of over. But you people come from lots of different places, and if there are gay issues going on, and you get wind of Mormon anti-gay participation in them, contact Laura, because I am very willing to do it again for the money in another state.
Thank you. Folks, here I have an envelope that says Far Between. You can put a bill of any denomination. You can put a check if you want. Joshua Bain is selling booklets with Bishop Reese's message. Thank you for coming, and thank you for the conversation.